InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Nearly 50,000 lives in the U.S. are lost each year to suicide, and millions more consider it. But a new approach to clinical care is able to reduce suicide rates by a significant degree. InfoTrack's Roy Mackey has the story. Roy?
Thank you, Chris. Brian Amidani, Ph.D., is lead author of this study and director of research for behavioral health sciences at Henry Ford Health, a nonprofit healthcare system based in Detroit. Dr. Amidani, you were examining ways to reduce suicide rates. Before we get to your findings, can you just maybe give us some stats on how big the issue of suicide is today?
Suicide's a pretty major public health concern in the U.S. Almost 50,000 people are dying by suicide in the United States. We estimate that nearly 2 million people a year are attempting suicide, and well over 10 million people a year are thinking about suicide. So if you think about that more broadly, we estimate that about 5% of the entire U.S. adult general population has suicide thoughts at any given time during a year.
Now, your study shows a 25% reduction in suicide rates using something called the Zero Suicide Model. Can you briefly explain what the Zero Suicide Model is and what makes it so effective?
Yeah, the Zero Suicide Model is an approach to clinical care pathway for suicide prevention that we pioneered at Henry Ford Health back in 2001. The basic concept is that we have identification of people who are at risk. So we're doing suicide risk screening, suicide risk assessment, identification using other means, and then linkage to other kinds of treatments. And first of all, we use a series of brief interventions and connection to family members and support services, and then also connection to more intensive suicide prevention specific treatment. The key here is that all of these interventions and strategies are focused directly on suicide prevention, whereas in the past, most ways that people have done suicide prevention has been using standard strategies for depression or anxiety or substance use disorder, but they haven't specifically focused on suicide prevention. What makes us different is that we do that, and that we embed that within a real healthcare system and design processes around suicide prevention that are built into the infrastructure of a big system.
How long-term are the results of this when someone's suicide is prevented?
We have been doing this work since 2001, and our original metric was to evaluate whether anybody made a suicide attempt or death within a year after a healthcare visit. So that's how we've traditionally measured it at Henry Ford. It's measured in a lot of different ways. In this study, we're looking more near term about suicide attempts within 90 days after a healthcare visit.
Yeah, your study mentions that nearly everyone who dies by suicide visits a doctor within a year prior to their death. Why do you think these opportunities for intervention are often missed, and what role do you see primary care providers playing in suicide prevention?
Suicide prevention is missed for a variety of reasons. So yes, that's absolutely right. Most people have a healthcare visit. Over 83% of people have a healthcare visit in the year before they die by suicide. And over 92% of people in the year before they make a suicide attempt. So we have opportunities. And actually, most of those visits are happening right in the few weeks before somebody makes an attempt or dies. So we have an opportunity to do something about it. Traditionally, suicide prevention was always viewed as something that was not the responsibility of a healthcare system. And that really has only been the case for the last 10 years or so. Now, the reason that it hasn't been implemented, there's several of them. One of them is that if you just start screening, then nobody really knows what they're supposed to do if somebody screens positive. So you have to have a structure in place in order to support screening for suicide prevention. In the same way as if somebody had a high cholesterol score, you need to have a pathway or some strategy for what to do to prevent a heart attack. And the other thing is that that causes concern. So if there wasn't a strategy in place, then providers are nervous about doing it, because they need a solution for what to do if somebody screens positive. You can't just do a bunch of screening. You know, the next thing is that most people have never really been trained in any of their education or training to actually ask people about suicide risk. That isn't included in most medical schools. It's not included in social work programs or psychology programs. So they don't really know how to do it. And for the first time, we're really thinking about training people. We're teaching them how to do it, providing specific protocols for what they can do when somebody screens positive, and that there are solutions available and evidence-based strategies that help reduce the risk once somebody screens positive.
You mentioned screening a lot. Can you explain how that screening process in the Zero Suicide Project differs from what traditional screening might be?
Most people screen for depression in healthcare systems. There are a lot of tools available, but most commonly people use the patient health questionnaire. It's a 9-item screener. The first 8 of those questions are about depression. And when people respond positively to depression, then they are plugged into a series of pathways to respond for depression care. But the 9th question is actually about suicide risk. It's about suicidal ideation. And so when somebody screens positive on that question, it's a suicide question. But what has happened in the past is that most people are just using the first 2 questions. And then if they're positive, then they ask other questions. So most of the response has really been about depression. What we're advocating for is to cast a broader net and really have a protocol in place to respond to the answer about suicide prevention.
Suicide is a leading cause of death for young people, especially those aged 10 to 34. How can the zero suicide model be adapted for younger patients, including adolescents?
Absolutely. I'm so glad you asked this question. There are a lot of kids struggling, and we want to continue to work so hard to save people's lives, and particularly young people who are struggling. The zero suicide model, in the way that it is designed right now, can reach kids all the way down to age 12, which is when most of the screening tools are validated down to age 12. There are even some that are validated even younger at age 10. So we do have screening tools available, and then most of the interventions can actually be implemented. So we're talking about a safety plan, we're talking about intensive psychotherapy approaches that are specifically focused on the suicide risk itself. All of those approaches we can use down through adolescence and down into even childhood at age 10 to 12. So there are strategies, and we need to do more, and we need to keep working harder, which is what we're doing, to come up with new resources, new strategies, new approaches that can even get to kids younger than that. We have kids dying by suicide attempting even younger than that, and so we need to continue to work hard to reach everyone that we can.
The zero suicide model has been used for nearly 25 years in Michigan. Do you see this as something that will be rolled out eventually nationwide?
Yeah, health systems are already starting to adopt this across the country. In fact, many health systems are already starting to do screening. They're already thinking about how to embed safety plans. The missing element here has always been the data. Health systems have always been looking for a solution, but they're always trying to tackle tons of different initiatives all at the same time. There are all sorts of problems that are facing the country with health. And so in order to make this a priority, we have to demonstrate that there is an evidence-based solution that actually works to prevent suicide and that can be implemented in a cost-effective way. And so these data that we presented in this paper provide the first national level evidence across many healthcare systems that we can actually do this work, that it does reduce suicide attempts and deaths, and that health systems want to adopt it.
Brian Amidani, PhD, Director of Research for Behavioral Health Services at Henry Ford Health in Detroit. Doctor, thanks for sharing your research with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.